Nicole, what is your greatest fear?
Probably settling down, house in the suburbs, children. What's yours?
A very bold statement right now.
What is yours?
What is my it's so funny. I actually think it's not necessarily settling down that is my biggest fear. It is the house in the suburbs. That is
Yeah,
my
no,
biggest
that's
fear. I
terrifying.
think a bigger fear though might be a house in a rural area.
Oh my God.
Like nothing sounds more horrific than that when there is to live in a town where there is nothing to do,
Yeah. Oh
you
my God,
know,
worst
is just like go
nightmare.
crazy.
Where, except take care of my child. Kill me now.
Yeah. I'm trying to think of what other horrifying things. Eddie Z, you're here. Eddie Z, what's your
I'm gonna keep this to myself just in
oh.
case it get used against me.
That's true. But I don't know.
Ooh.
I feel like someone giving me a house in the rural area doesn't sound like necessarily a punishment to most people. Like it's just like you still live, you have a home, you should be happy. But I don't know. There's something about that just being in like the middle of nowhere that's like terrifying.
Yeah, being primed for being tormented by a serial killer or a demented demonic entity.
Oh, okay. And a good
Yeah.
segue, if
Thanks.
I didn't ruin it. So, what are we segueing to, Nicole?
We're segueing into talking about it.
It. It is. What is it? What is it?
Who knows? That's what we're going to tell you, though.
We're going to find out.
Because, we've watched these movies, all of them.
All of them. So, I'm Rolando,
And I'm Nicole.
and this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals
An original podcast
about
on originality.
unoriginality. Welcome
Welcome
back,
back.
season two, everybody. How are you?
Cool.
You
Good.
may or may not have noticed, but we have new art for our podcast cover. So let us know if you like it.
Yeah, give us your thoughts. That's all Rolando there, so give him kudos.
Thank you, thank you. Yeah, I think the new style that we picked is a little more. I don't know. It tells people more so than our symbol. As much as I love our symbol, is that a fear? Would you count that as fear? Losing followers?
Yeah, I guess I would.
Yeah, in this
Yeah.
day and age, like it is a fear,
It
especially like
is.
if you're a social media influencer, you know,
Yeah, just
when you're
having
losing
like your
followers, it's just
family
like,
like support and that's it.
right? Yeah, that's embarrassing. It's just like you're a
So
loser. You don't even have
embarrassing.
friends,
Yeah.
you know.
Yeah. Oh God,
I
that's a
think the
fear.
biggest gripe I actually have with going out this is people who have social media accounts for their dogs, so they have like an extra follower.
Yeah,
Biggest
yeah.
gripe.
If Pennywise was to taunt me, then it would literally be like the followers list, like just slowly depleting in numbers. And it'd be
That's
like, oh my
true. Yeah, I
God.
feel like this a missed opportunity here because if Pennywise was torturing kids nowadays, it's just like
Yeah.
what kind of messed
He'd
up
be like
mind games he
commenting them on
doing
their
on these kids?
Instagram
Yeah,
photos
it's
and
just like a
stuff and
little
Twittering
Instagram
them.
like Pennywise, just like fucking
Yeah.
with all these,
Fucking
bullying them
Pennywise
to
is
death.
everywhere. Pennywise is an internet troll.
Oh
That's what
my
it should
God,
have been
that's
this day and
true.
age.
Oh, you know what? They should have.
They should
Now
have.
I'm like angry that they didn't go this
This
route.
is, once again, we come up with how they should have done things.
Hopefully in 27 years when they remake it again, like it's gonna be this time period, they're gonna be like, well, obviously Pennywise is a fucking he's an internet bully, he's a troll.
Yeah.
Like this is a new iteration of it.
Yeah. You don't see him, you read him, and it's
Yes, I
worse.
love it.
I love it
He
too.
messes more so with your mind. He's gonna get people to commit suicide, and that's how he wins.
Yes.
Ah, we wrote it. We wrote it, guys.
We did.
That's it. Podcast over. We're
But let
done.
us backtrack in case people don't know who the fuck Pennywise is.
Yes. But actually, before we do that, actually, we should introduce who we have here. We have Eddie Z. Eddie Z,
Our
hi.
producer.
Hey guys.
How you doing?
Hi.
Once again, excited to be here. Second season.
Second season.
That's
Thank you.
great.
Yes.
Yeah. And we also have Bobby
We
on the
do have
couch.
Bobby. Yes.
Yeah.
Laying on the couch
Laying
now.
on the
He's
couch.
laying on the couch. And we also have an actual listener listening in as we record.
Does that
They're
mean we have
giving
a
us
live
live
studio
feedback. Yeah.
We
audience
have a
now?
we tech this counts as a live studio audience like for this
So no more
recording.
laugh tracks and stuff.
No.
Yeah.
Insert
So yeah,
laughter here.
so if you hear laughter in the background, it is our studio audience, guys.
Yay.
Yay.
Season two, breaking new boundaries. All right, so we're going to backtrack and we're going to tell you a little bit about what we're talking about. Stephen King's It, which was a novel released in 1986. I think it was about his 18th novel, although according to Wikipedia, it was his 22nd because he had
Yeah.
a couple that were released under pseudonyms. This book was about 1,100 pages long.
1100.
11, yes, 1,100. Thank
Oh.
you for saying it differently.
Oh
It was long. And of course, this is in, I feel like, this day and age where a lot of people were like starting to really catch on to Stephen King. There was a lot of adaptations of his work. I mean, we already did Pet Sematary, which came out in 89.
Oh.
You know, Carrie had come out, The Shining had come out, Stand By Me had come out, a lot of stuff had come out. So it was a natural selection for them to take it and adapt it. But they didn't make it for a movie. Actually, the original It from 1990 was a miniseries.
Yes.
It was a two-part miniseries.
Right.
So let's talk about 1990's It.
It wasn't supposed to be just a miniseries. It got adapted into a miniseries, but it was supposed to actually be like an 8-part series.
Yeah. Yeah.
That got like condensed down to,
which is why it's probably so like the condensity of it really feels like it was rushed and just all over the place.
And yet it still feels so long. You know?
True.
That's a hard thing to achieve, to make something so condensed and yet feels so long.
Feels so rushed, and like they're trying to get so much in and it's like dragging their feet. So the director's name is Tommy Lee Wallace. When they were deciding to who could direct this movie, naturally they thought, let's get the guy who directed Halloween 3 and Fright Night 2.
Okay, I don't think I've seen either of those two movies.
You shouldn't. Halloween 3 is really bad. Halloween 3 is actually the only film in the Halloween canon that doesn't have Michael Myers.
Right, it's, yes, we spoke Witch. About it when yeah. we talked about Halloween. Yeah.
And then also he directed a couple episodes of the 80s Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember the wordplay episode where the guy... I don't know if you watched this one when we did the Twilight Zone, but the guy, he all of a sudden realized that everyone was speaking a different language than him.
Mm-hmm.
That's Tommy Lee Wallace.
Okay.
So he directed those episodes.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, so he just got his feet wet with a bit with some horror in the 80s. So they let him direct this miniseries for, what's going on?
No, nothing.
Oh, okay. They let him direct
this. I just hear the noise in the background, but that's on his microphone.
Sure, I can mute that out.
Yeah.
So he was a natural selection for 1990s. Miniseries.
A show of hands, has anyone actually in the studio, has anyone read It? Okay, no one raised their hand. All right, that sounds about right.
Well, I know that we have a fan though. Our producer Eddie Z is a really big fan of Stephen King's work.
Yes, I just didn't read It because once again it's like really dense.
Yeah,
you know, one of those things that just kind of intimidated me when I was a kid.
Is that one of his most densest, or is
I don't know if it's the most dense. I think The Stand.
Oh,
The Stand.
Okay.
I think that was pretty intense. And then you have his The Dark Tower novels.
Yeah.
The series
that
he did.
Wait,
too.
What is it?
But I found something very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
That there is another adaptation of it.
Yeah.
Yes, in India.
Oh, I did read about that.
Yeah,
yes.
they did a series. They did a television series, 52 episodes, one season.
Wow.
52 episodes.
That actually sounds like an appropriate way to tell the story.
They loosely adapted it. So instead of like this evil entity monster, it's a ghost. It's a vengeful ghost. And it takes place in modern times, India.
Oh my gosh.
So I found that was like, that would have been really cool to see.
I wonder if there's any musical numbers in it too. That would be so great. And I'm not even being like facetious here. Just in India, they're more prone to have musical numbers in their films because it's more accepted. So It is about a group of 7 children. In the book, it was 1957, but in the miniseries, it's 1960.
Yes.
It takes place in a town called Derry, Maine. And I, now watching these more Stephen King films, I'm coming to realize that a lot of his stuff takes place in Maine,
which I've been to,
which is funny.
That's like, I think that's like literally his whole thing. Like,
yeah, he's from Maine, I think.
Yeah, he's from Maine.
And
most of the stories they
take
do
place
yeah,
in
take
Maine.
Place in Maine. And it's a whole mythology
yes.
of all the different
so
towns.
I've found
they connect.
Doing research that Derry actually pops up in other short stories and novels, and it's one of his 3 major locations. There's also Castle Rock, and what was the other one that they call Salem's Lot? There's a third.
Yeah, I can't recall that.
Yeah, but there's 3 like recurring towns that a lot of bad shit happens and that come up in a lot of different Stephen King novels, and one of them is Derry.
Mm-hmm.
So Derry in this one, it's like not the only time you'll see it. Like in other stories, it will pop up.
Well, we mentioned this in the Pet Sematary, but they do reference Derry in
Pet Sematary. Do. Yes, yeah. You did mention that, and I didn't know what you were talking about then. So now I know what you're talking about.
Okay.
So anyway, it takes place in Derry, Maine. 7 children who are just having one hell of a fucking summer, man. They're being bullied by these assholes.
Who look like twice their age.
Yeah, yeah. Just like these losers. And then they're also being tormented by this unknown creature that takes the form of a clown. And we come to learn that this clown is called Pennywise the Clown. And these kids, in the fact that they're being bullied by the adults in their lives, their home lives kind of suck, and that there's this demonic entity that one of their little brothers in the beginning of the film gets killed by,
Georgie,
They kind of band together to try and find out what the fuck is going on in their town, what's haunting them, and try to destroy it. And they call themselves the Losers.
The Losers Club.
The Losers Club, yeah. And then the film also kind of goes back and forth between them as children and them as adults, which is a very interesting approach.
Yeah, they did. The film relies heavily on flashbacks.
Yeah, but it goes back and forth. So it's like, it starts off in the present day and then it goes back and then it goes back to the present day and then it goes back.
Mostly, and I would say that's mostly actually from the, in the first episode of the miniseries.
Yeah.
Right? The
yeah,
first mostly. Half is the
when
one
you're
that,
introducing
like,
people.
Right. And I think, I actually like kind of the way it starts, which is just like, you know, all these people are getting phone calls and stuff.
Yeah.
And then they're, what I don't necessarily like is like how long these flashbacks are going right to the past.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? So it's just like, I think we could have, yeah, it was structurally, I like some elements. I also don't like some elements.
Yeah. It's also, to me, it's kind of not effective because if you're just going to go immediately to the future, then my impression of the past is going to be different because I know how the future looks.
This is also true. That tends to be a problem with flashbacks.
Yeah.
Where we don't, there's like this element of like, well, we know they're going to survive because they're all together.
Yeah. If it's a suspense thing, then, you know, maybe not. Like if there's like a, yeah, I don't know, whatever. So the characters are Bill, who's kind of like the leader of the Losers.
He has a stutter.
He's the brother of Georgie, who was murdered in the beginning by this Pennywise clown in the sewer.
Sewer grate.
Sewer grate. That's what it's called. Thank you. Just to say, there's Bill, the leader. He's a stutterer. There's Stanley, who's kind of very quiet and passive.
Yes.
There's Eddie, who's a hypochondriac and very opinionated.
Yes. There's, Stanley is also Jewish.
Yes, yeah, Stanley.
Although I thought Eddie was Jewish.
There's Richie, who's kind of like the wisecracking one.
Mm-hmm.
There's Mike, who's the token black one.
Yes.
And then there's Beverly, who's the token woman one, because that's how this shit works. And unfortunately, I'm going to have to put this in here, that Bill is the transparent Stephen King substitute.
Adult Bill.
Yes, because when Bill grows up to be an adult, he becomes a mystery writer. And the only person that's of star power when these kids grow up is John Ritter. He plays Ben. Did I mention Ben? And then there's Ben, the overweight kid.
Oh, Ben. That's
yeah,
right.
I'm only said kid. Six. Yeah, I'm so sorry, Ben.
That was John Ritter?
When he grew up and became a successful skinny architect, he was John Ritter. Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that was John Ritter.
From Three's Company.
With I guess, the beard. He looked a lot like Al from Home Improvement. And that's what I kept thinking.
Oh, yeah, no.
Yeah.
That was John Ritter. Rest in peace, John Ritter.
Rest in peace, John Ritter.
Yes, but other than that, the film says it's a special appearance, but very much the star of it is the person who plays Pennywise the Clown, which is Tim Curry.
And what a special appearance it is.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Very, first of all, his voice. He's able to, because Tim Curry has a very distinguishable voice. So like the way he actually masquerades his voice and like kind of like tries to disappear into the character is admirable.
Yeah.
I think he does a great job. I think that the film itself or the avenue in which he had to do this on was not the best, but despite that, he gave a pretty fantastic performance.
He is by far the best performance out of that whole miniseries.
Thing. Yeah.
Absolutely. Because he, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, he took his performance to, I mean, I had to assume this was a choice on his part. It's just like, he must have like been like, oh, this is not good. I'm just going to be over the top, wacky,
yeah, pretty much,
crazy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's just like, it is, and people will enjoy it.
Well, so it's interesting because to me, he also took like grimy old man that wants you to get in the back of his truck approach. It's like, hey, George, like the first time we see him is when he's talking to Georgie. That's mm-hmm. the first time we ever see Pennywise in any iteration of it.
Mm-hmm.
And that scene doesn't play as scary as much as it's kind of creepy.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Georgie. Aren't you going to say hello? Oh, come on, bucko. Don't you want a balloon?
I'm not supposed to take stuff from strangers. My dad said so.
Very wise of your dad, Georgie. Very wise indeed.
Whereas he's just like, hiya, Georgie. Why don't you come down here? It's just like kind of like he's got this weird voice.
And he sounds like an old man. He smokes cigarettes like his whole life.
Man. Smokes cigarettes, just like kind of wants to manipulate you for whatever reason. So it doesn't come off as like, it comes off more as a man, but and even then, I kind of like that too, because then this demonic entity, which we find out that it is able to like take the form of something which is genuinely creepy, which is old white men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's true. I don't disagree with you. Old white men can be creepy. That was a
joke. I mean, not all of them.
Not all of them, sure, but like a majority of them. I feel like we're going to get in so much trouble for this episode.
We're going to isolate some of our listeners. I apologize.
Yeah, but Tim Curry's performance was great, but like, oh man, everybody else's was just like
just so not good.
I mean, I don't know if you blame the writing, because the writing's also not good.
Yeah.
Like the screenplay.
I think it's sloppy going back and forth.
Structurally, sure. Structurally, I can agree with you. But I'm talking literally the dialogue.
Yeah,
like,
it's cringy.
Some of the scenes, like, it just felt forced. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. I also didn't see a lot of chemistry between the cast.
Did not see the chemistry.
But it's also a TV movie, basically.
So, I've seen plenty of fantastic TV movies.
I don't think I have ever. And I actually miss the era of bad TV movies.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I think the only one that delivers on that still is Lifetime.
Yes. Well, that's why people love them. Mm. Because it's kitsch at the end of the day. Yes. People take comfort in their kitsch. But I think that this wanted to be good. It wasn't. I think it followed like a lot of like formulaic rules. And that was kind of one of the things that it suffered from. Mm-hmm. They also had a little too much going on. So this film kept something from the book, which is Bill's relationship with his wife, Audra. But yes, they did it in like three scenes. And then at the end, they tried to like deliver on it. And it was just like not worth it. Like there was like this whole conflict with him and his wife. And then Pennywise kind of takes her hostage at the end. But it was just like trouble in their marriage and we have to work things out. And then she comes and then she's ripe for being plucked up by Pennywise. And
right.
So, and then
speaking of troubled marriages, Beverly also marries an abusive man.
Yeah.
Slightly less
abusive. I want to talk about Beverly in the second film.
Well, we should talk a little bit about this Beverly too.
This Beverly's terrible.
Okay, why do you think she's terrible?
I just think that she was not developed at all. She was just kind of like the girl there. And like, there were points where I got her confused with Audra when I like thought back about
it. They looked nothing alike. And Audra was like in only two scenes.
And yet still, I was like, wait a minute, is that Beverly or something?
Interesting. I actually thought Beverly in this one was forgettable. But I think a lot of the characters were kind of forgettable.
Yeah.
If it actually hadn't been that
Except for Bill.
Which one's Bill?
The ponytail.
No, God, he's just as forgettable as all the others.
No, but I feel like there was so much focused on him that, like, that's the one person that you remember. Like, you kind of can...
Oh, I remember, actually, Al from Home Improvement.
John
Ritter, thank you. He looked like Al. I'm sorry, guys. It's like, okay, that beard made him look like Al.
It's John Ritter.
I can't... And this is a problem we're going to have in the next movie, too, in the next reiteration of It, where it's just like, I don't know who's who. I just...
At a certain
point, I can't remember who did what, who's going. Oh, maybe. I mean, I'll take that back. Actually, we'll see. We'll see when. We'll see why. But
yeah.
The other thing I will say though, Beverly was in this version of the movie. Did you notice how like all the guys were very handsy with her, like hands wrapped around her, kind of gripping her and stuff.
Yeah, like, and she's like very like passive and lets it happen.
Yeah, like she was very, for lack of a better word, a hoe-ish. Sorry.
I mean, I suppose. Okay, fine. Just because you're handsy doesn't necessarily mean that the woman herself is hoe-ish. She's just used to men treating her in a certain way.
I mean, it was a different time, I guess, right? Like,
yeah, just don't blame her for it. Tell the men to keep their fucking hands off her.
Well, she should be the one to tell them to get their hands off of her.
Right, but if we're going to use the whole different time thing, then like women weren't as, you know.
Yeah, this is true. I'm not blaming her.
They weren't told fuck politeness back then like they are now.
Do you think this was, though, kind of hinting to what happens in the book? Or do we want
to... Yeah, there might be hinting why Beverly is problematic in general.
And because of her source character in the book?
Because of the person who wrote her.
I don't know.
Who I don't think knows how to write women.
Okay. All right. I think we should save this for when we talk about... Because we should compare both Beverly's performances here. But actually, speaking of which, like, I don't know, is there much anything else anyone wants to say about
the ending?
The 1990s?
The ending is, it's just like, it's so weirdly done, you know, like when, because at the end of it, they all band together as adults. The reason why we're also talking about them, they were kids, they thought they defeated him, Pennywise, But then they realize that there might not be. And because they realize that Pennywise hibernates every 27 years. So they're like, okay, if he's fucking alive in 30 years, we have to make an oath that we come back and we will destroy him. And of course, Pennywise comes back. So they go back to Derry and they try and defeat him. And this means that they have to enter his lair and find him in his true form and defeat him in that way. Because he's this demonic entity they find out that's like from another planet.
Another universe.
Like a monster realm. Yeah. So he's not really a demon. He's just like some otherworldly monster that they have to defeat.
He becomes a big spider monster at the end.
That lives underneath Derry, which is why everyone in Derry is like fucked up, because he's pretty much been sleeping underneath there for thousands of years. Yes. And this town is built on that.
Yes, yes, yes. That's right.
And he lives in the sewers.
Because there was that scene where like Beverly was talking about how fucked up the town is because she was almost, I mean, it was implied that she was almost going to get raped by the bullies.
Yes.
Right? And you see the neighbor who looks, he looks like disgusted by what's happening, and then he just like turns away and hides.
Yeah.
Which, you know, welcome to America. That tends to be what happens.
And yeah, unfortunately.
We tend to turn a blind eye to like, you know, the sins happening across the street.
Yeah, maybe, you know, over America, there's this hidden layer of
it's called Trump.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, I was going to say underneath this country. That was a setup, guys.
You set me up and I hit the ball. I'm sorry.
What I was going to say was that maybe it has been sleeping under this entire country for thousands of years.
And is now alive through Trump. I get it. Yeah, I'm here with you. I feel you.
Okay, so anyway, but yeah, so when they go in, like, it's like pretty much the true form of this it is a spider.
Yes.
Like this weird spider thing that they have to, which is just bizarre because it's like you got this brilliant, eloquent Tim Curry who's just like taunting them the whole time. And then let me show you my true form. And then it's a spider. Uh-huh. And it's just like doesn't work. Especially when you go into the lair and you find out that it's just this weird big spider web. I feel like
when
they had the source from Stephen King, they just didn't know how to translate it. So they chose a more like simple route. And they were like, let's just make him a spider.
No, well, that is technically more or less how it was in the books, from my understanding.
Right, but like the second version, I think, got it a little bit more right. Whereas
I don't disagree with you there.
The first one just turned him into a spider.
I all right, yes, but I don't know. I don't know. I am not agreeing with you necessarily that it doesn't work. Like if you're talking about special effects wise, like sure, that didn't work necessarily because it was kind of like
no story wise. But
I think story wise, I think it's fine. I think that you know the fact that it is otherworldly, it is different, it is. I mean, in the book, to my understanding, also, they're not literally just, like, fighting it underneath Derry. They're kind of already in, like, this plane of monsters where they end up encountering the final version of it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's, like, this whole other level of supernaturalism
I see.
That happens, I think. And I think, sure, it wasn't necessarily executed very well in the TV movie. You know, you're limited. It's a TV movie, right? You're limited by your effects budget. You're limited by effects, period. I think the... From a structural point of view, it's just like I don't mind seeing the demonic creature in its full form. You know, I don't mind that. It was weird looking at it, sure, but it was.
I mean, I don't mind it either. I wouldn't mind it if it was just, I guess, better done better.
Yeah, and I agree with you. If it was done better, then I'd say it's like it'd be better. But like story wise, I think it was fine.
Well, story-wise, too, though, you know, the joke in this new version of it was that, like, the character who's very much Stephen King doesn't know how to end his story as well.
Uh-huh.
The James McAvoy character. Like, yeah. Everyone's like, love your books. You suck at endings.
Yeah.
And that's also very clearly, like, a Stephen King self-referential thing. Okay. And that's also kind of how I feel overall about it is I don't like the ending.
What? Did they defeat the monster?
It's how they defeat the monster.
By witches?
Which is that it takes this weird form. And so it's different. I've never read the book.
Uh-huh.
But I'm assuming that it's essentially the same in all of these things where they just kind of have to face their fears and that's how they defeat it.
Uh-huh.
And that's how they're able in this 1991 to rip the heart out of the spider.
Yeah, they're no longer afraid.
Which doesn't kind of work.
Why?
For me.
I actually think, to be honest, that's the one thing I actually do appreciate. The fact that they're able to... It's corny. I'm not even going to pretend like it's not. I think there is kind of this, it's still kind of wonderful in some sort of way of like being able to stand up to your monster and it's because you have no fear anymore that you're able to defeat it.
That's a beautiful thought. I like it. It's the execution. It just, especially with what I've watched literally 3 hours of, mm-hmm. that you're telling me this is how it's defeated mm-hmm. with this weird sentimentality thing. Like this just doesn't, it's almost like left turn, whoa, Seriously, that's how it gets defeated? Like this thing that's been around for thousands of years that has this unbelievable power?
Uh-huh.
So it's just like, I agree that that is a beautiful sentiment. But the execution of it takes away that beauty and just makes me confused and is like, really?
I don't know. I disagree with you. I think the way to defeat the monster is fine. What I think is the ending that really kind of messes it up is like the ending that happens after that, which is everyone kind of gets their happy endings. Yeah. There's no real ramifications from it, right? Like Ben and Beverly end up That's together. True. They are about to have a kid.
Yeah, the trauma apparently.
Right. And I think this is where I think the movie itself could have had a stronger ending. Mm-hmm. I'm fine with the way to defeat it. I think if they had kind of kept the ending a little more macabre is where it's better. Like where even though they're able to defeat this demonic entity, there are ramifications and their happiness is the price that they pay.
True.
Is what I think would have made this a little stronger ending. Yeah. Like for example, Audrey, if she was catatonic for the rest of her life, like
Audra.
She was catatonic for the rest of her life as a result of like these actions of these kids and stuff, like that's a fine. I think that's fine. They keep it dark.
Yeah. That's true. I agree.
There are just some things that like just standing up to fear aren't gonna fix. And these would be some of those things.
Well, that was my problem with all of them, too, is that none of them really suffered any sort of trauma. And that's highly unrealistic because of the shit that they experienced.
One of them did.
Just one.
Stanley.
Yeah. And, well,
because he commits suicide because he does not want to go back.
Spoiler. But at the same time, too, they also, well, especially in the second one, they make it seem like that was a heroic act.
Well, that's true. They kind of,
which is so it's like it was a trauma or was it just him being actually a like this passive guy was actually a hero?
Okay,
which is also like then he didn't suffer from any fucking trauma.
I don't know. I think okay, sure.
The one who kind of did was because he stayed in Derry was Mike, and mm-hmm. Mike kind of became the most believable character, even though he was totally underdeveloped in my opinion.
In the 90s version.
In all of the versions.
Okay.
In the 90s version, he's just like walking around like this like flustered detective.
Yes.
But in the newer version, we'll get to that in a bit. But he's also like he stayed there. He lived with his trauma and he grew from it and he learned all these things from it and he became obsessed with it. And that to me is more believable than the rest of them going on and becoming majorly successful.
There's a reason for why they become majorly successful, though.
Why?
It turns out that they're actually protected by a spirit guardian. This is a part. This is apparently from the book. There's like an entity that protects them.
Oh, interesting.
And that's why they are all able to leave Derry and become successful. That doesn't really get explored in the movies.
Yeah, that doesn't.
Yeah, they didn't want to because the mythology was kind of like, it's a little crazy.
Yeah, it's very wonky.
You know, it's a little wonky and stuff like that. But because of what they did and leaving, they were able to be blessed.
I see.
In their life.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Again, this is more problems necessarily with like the source material than the movie themselves. Like if we're talking strictly from a movie point of view, like they just left town, they become successful. There's no real explanation as to how that happens other than the fact that it's just like, well, you know, some people do find success. It is, you know, that's not unnatural. The level of success this group of peers have all experienced is like, that's
a bit much. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't find the 90s version scary, but it could also be necessarily that it's just like, you know, the way we do scares nowadays is different. Mm. I think, you know, I was like, I didn't hate watching it, but I was just like, oh, okay. It's fine. You know who else was in it? We didn't mention who else was one of the child actors. Seth Green.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Seth Green was the original Eddie.
Yeah.
We flash forward now to 2017. 27 years later from the 1990s version, mm-hmm. We have more notable child actors.
Do we?
Well, I would say definitely. Oh, I guess one. I guess, sorry, same problem. One notable child actor. The kid from Stranger Things, Finn Wolfgang?
Yeah.
Is that his name? Yeah, I got it. He is a big, I would say, like, the big name from the child actors and stuff. And then everyone actually gives those solid performances.
Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about 2017's It and its sequel, 2019, because I think these two had to be, I guess, digest together.
Obviously, like, Stephen King went on record saying It Chapter 2 is literally the second part of It. It's not a sequel or it's not a follow-up. It's, like, literally just kind of like how Kill Bill was broken up into two, but it's technically one film. Mm-hmm. That's how the author and the director, Anthony Muschietti, view this. that it's one long film, which sure. thank God it's not a 5.5 hour film that we all had to sit through.
Although it too wasn't actually greenlit until after it yes. came out.
Yeah, they had every intention of doing it, but because Hollywood wants to see the numbers and the money, uh-huh. then they'll let them know. Which is why they actually, a lot of part two looks as though that they like had leftover scenes from the first one, but the actors had to come back mm-hmm. and they had aged incredibly so within a year, apparently. So they had to
yeah, de-aging I mean, that's what happens them. With adolescents.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. So they had to actually de-age them, which is why they kind of looked off in the new one.
I didn't notice that.
I noticed it.
I will say this, though. Mm. I think because of that decision, chapter one, stands alone as a beginning to end its own movie. Wonderfully. I didn't necessarily need chapter two.
Really?
I'm going to say that right now. Yeah. I think because it, you know, they didn't know necessarily if they're going to do a sequel. Mm-hmm. So you had to like kind of close things up, but still leave things open enough in case, you know, we get picked up again. And I think as a result, they were able to tell a very, very well-told story from beginning to end. And if that was the end of this franchise because it didn't do well in the box office, I'd be fine. It's just like, this was satisfying.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, they did the smart choice of having the first film focus just on the kids yes. and their youth.
Right.
Which is something that the original film did not do.
Right.
And it works in the 2017 one because we actually get to see their chemistry, their relationships build, and you feel some sort of connection to these kids.
Correct. And then if you had not read the source material or even watched the 1990s version, mm-hmm. you don't know who lives or who's going to die. Yeah. There's always this fear of just like anyone can go at any moment.
Yep.
Right. And actually, one character does go and then they'll come back again in the sequel. It chapter two. You know what I'm talking about? The bully.
Oh, Henry Powers.
Yeah. Henry falls down a well and stuff. And then by all intents and purposes, he should be dead.
Yeah, that was a little weird.
Oh, it was. Well, I think, again, that comes with the problem of not knowing if you're going to do a sequel or not.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then also, you know, that's when you kind of need the source material, I feel like, in the second one with the Henry Bowers thing, because I had to look that up.
Who?
Henry Bowers.
And what about him?
As to why that all happened and what the hell that all meant. So, obviously, the last time we see him in the first one, mm-hmm. like you said, you know, it is implied that he
died.
He died.
He fell down the well.
He didn't die. And he was put into, I guess, an asylum.
Yeah.
But then his friend, who also he was convicted of someone's, I guess, all of their murders. We find out in the second one.
So, all right, in the 90s,
he survived. Right, so, he went home, got convicted of all of their murders.
I don't know if he got convicted of all their murders. They didn't say that. But in the 90s version, he apparently confessed to committing all the murders of all the missing kids. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So they tailed him for being a serial killer.
Yeah.
Right. In the new version,
he at least was convicted of the people.
His father's death.
Yes.
At the very least, because he killed his father in cold blood in the house. And being a minor and stuff, like, he might have been delusional. I think because he saw the balloon and stuff, and he kind of went crazy that moment, right?
Yeah.
And then he went into the loony bin and stuff. We don't know necessarily if they never mentioned that he got convicted for all the crimes.
Okay, then that's when I looked it up and I was like a little confused. Because then also, apparently, his friend survived after all those years and came back as a corpse to drive him to. Was that its form, though?
I think that was it. I think that
you think that was it.
That was a zombie form of. Yeah, there's still like laws of physics in this movie. It wasn't that their friend. Like, I think the implication is that this is it manifesting like this corpse.
If that was the implication, then that was bad because I didn't get that.
Interesting. No, I got it. I interpreted it that way.
That's how you interpreted it. Yeah. So that was a little hazy and weird and also completely unnecessary because after a while, after two attacks, Henry Bowers gets fucking killed and is no threat to them at all.
Spoiler.
Of course, guys, we're going to spoil it.
We are spoiling the shit out of it.
But then it's just like, then why even throw that in just to like, because this movie was long.
Chapter two was fucking long.
Yes. And you could have very well taken Henry Bowers out of the equation and the movie would have been fine. It wouldn't have been like, oh, wow, I think we needed Henry Bowers.
Outside of that mullet joke. Yeah, I think the movie would have been fine.
Yeah, maybe it was a way for certain characters to. The beats of the characters like kind of getting confidence and like becoming more okay with their fears and stuff, particularly with Eddie. Okay, maybe that. I get it.
Yeah.
But
I think they started to stand up to their fears. Again, another missed opportunity because like the bully, mm-hmm. Billy?
Henry Bowers.
He was a bigger threat to Ben. right? Ben himself didn't have really any encounters with Henry Bowers as the adult.
He didn't. No.
Missed opportunity because he was the one who kind of carved his initials into the fatty.
Yeah.
In part one.
Yeah.
You know? So
there's some terrible terrorizing. That was terrible terrorizing.
He was a horrible character, human being.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Yeah. But horrible, we actually really ghastly. Jumped into this. There are some major differences, I think, between the 1990s version and this one.
It.
So one of the first one is like the time periods. So in the original one, we mentioned it was 1960.
Mm-hmm.
In this version, it is the late 80s, right?
Yes.
Where it starts taking place.
Mm-hmm.
27 years later, now we're in, I don't know, whatever.
2016, that was the year.
It was 2016. Yeah, 2016. Okay, so 2016 in this universe.
Yeah.
27 years later. Which is interesting, right? Because 27 years is the difference between the 1990s version and the 2017 version.
Yeah.
That was cute.
Yeah.
Because it's a weird number for a demonic entity to pick. But then again, I guess there's no logic to demonic entities, right? Like, they just pick whatever they want.
Yeah, well, he's technically not a demon. He's
a monster.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. True. I would say that's the major difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, It Part 1.
It's just the kids.
It Part 2.
Is the adults
and flashbacks to the kids and stuff.
Yeah,
so,
and they have interactions and
what
stuff.
Did you think of those flashbacks in Part 2?
Overall, I thought they were more sentimental than they needed to be.
Oh, that's
okay. I found the second film to be incredibly sentimental.
All right.
It kind of suffered from that Lord of the Rings thing where at the end it's like, okay, you could have ended 20 minutes ago, but you decided to just have all these like weird sentimental moments because you think the audience is connecting with the Losers Club. And I get it. And I think some people are, that they identify with the Losers Club, and that we watch this whole film of them as kids. Now we see them as adults and we need to connect. And that's how you build relationships. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
Still a bit much. The reflection of them like walking down the street and seeing themselves as kids in the mirror.
Oh, I like that.
And then like the slow motion of them riding their bikes. Didn't need that, because at the end of the day too, I came here to watch a motherfucking horror movie.
I think, well, all right. Interesting. I disagree with you here.
Why?
Because I was like, because unlike Lord of the Rings, where that was like an hour ending, literally between like the final battle and like the final cut to black.
But the similarity is that like, okay, stop.
But they were shorter. They were like significant. It was like less than 10 minutes, I would say, between like those shots, the defeat. Between they kill it. And like the ending, it was mm-hmm. like maybe 10 minutes.
Mm.
And I don't, it never got like that sappy. We got like Stanley's letter, which was,
yes,
I think, the
that
sappiest
was
the third. Part.
That was, yeah, that was incredibly sappy.
The shots of like them seeing this, I think that was cute. I think it was nice. Yeah, so I'm not saying, I don't, yeah, I'm wholly disagreeing with you on this one because, yeah,
they,
sure, it's a horror movie.
They
but horror
like,
movies,
they go up
horror
ground.
Movies need stories need conclusions. And
they do
are,
need
like, conclusions,
but at the end of the day, they need one conclusion. They fucking, they come up from the sewers. The house gets destroyed. They go swimming in that lake. Fucking Ben and Beverly have their fucking moment, which is also the worst character is Ben by far.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, okay,
feels
we'll talk about this.
Nothing like his original character.
Oh, agreed
on
that
one. Too preoccupied with Beverly. Get over it.
We'll talk about that because I agree.
Anyway,
with you.
I mean, of course, I get it. It's Jessica Chastain. Of course, I'd be drooling too. But at the same time, it's like, get the fuck over it.
Uh-huh.
So, they go swimming, they put their clothes back on, they go walking through the town, they see themselves as children, they part ways, we get the letter from Stanley, and then it's like this whole fucking thing, and then there's even like another one to it, and it's just like...
Yeah, he writes his ending to his story.
I guess.
Is what James McAvoy does, but no, I mean...
I also am a fan of open-ended things. I am a fan of things not being like completely like sealed up with a nice little bow on it. And like for you to say that stories need closures, and I actually kind of disagree with that. Maybe for this kind of story, but like it just got a little bit too much of that.
No,
especially with how it was defeated, and it was just like, oh my God.
All right. Not all, you're right. Not all stories need closure, mm-hmm. right?
And your gripe with the original could have very well been applied here.
True.
Mm-hmm.
I think the difference is the execution, I suppose. Right? Where, yeah, everyone got their happy ending, but they weren't like it wasn't overly happy as it was in the original 1990s version.
No, it was sentimental. There was too much calm after the storm.
You know, but isn't that what happens? Like, after a storm, there tends to be a calm. Like, they call it a calm after a storm for a reason.
I mean, there's a lot of sayings out there that don't make any fucking sense.
Okay.
Having your cake and eat it too doesn't make any sense, but I digress.
Uh-huh.
I also think that in this version, even more so, I expect them to address that these people are probably traumatized up the ass, and they're not.
This is true. I think the only one who might still be traumatized might be Beverly. And like, it's more trauma of her own making. But that is called the cycle of abuse. It happens.
Where, of her own making?
Yeah, right. She married the man who is basically her father. He was... Okay. Right. But no. Hang on. But I'm just saying... What I'm saying, though, is that there... This is true to life, though. We... what's it called? Not we, but... People who had abusive households growing up,
yes,
they find themselves in abusive relationships.
Yes,
later
I just
on.
I think that maybe you might want to say that a little different, that it was of her own making.
Her character. This is you're right. It's not of her own making. Like, yeah, you know, what we do in our subconscious, like, is this reason this is our subconscious. But I'm just saying, it's just like, this is, but she, like, her character didn't even realize it because they made this explicitly clear. Like, once they left Derry, their memories kind of started going away.
Yeah, which is interesting too, because is it of it or of their childhoods altogether? Because they kind of remembered each other, but they didn't. That was also very unclear. Because then, with Beverly in particular, like, if she doesn't really remember her childhood at all, which is one avenue, then the cycle of abuse, is that a subconscious thing that it's like going over again?
Oh, that's an excellent question. Maybe
because like, maybe Bill doesn't stutter.
My interpretation, and he starts stuttering once he's back in town. And
yeah,
he's
so apparently people. They've forgotten all of that.
It's not. I don't know necessarily that they forgot.
Yeah.
Again, I think it's no. I don't think they chose to forget.
Well, that's one of the themes that Stephen King plays with, is childhood memories, and how we think we remember things the way they were, but that's not actually the case. And how memories can be a fickle thing in that sense.
Yeah.
But also the element, there are two elements here, is childhood memories.
Yeah, and
memories
and trauma.
And trauma, and how we want to forget, and how we naturally forget, period.
Yeah.
And then there's this element of the supernatural force that emanates from the ground.
Yeah.
And how that affects Derry itself.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah. I agree with you. And I also, the other thing we also need to remember is, I was like, the human body does repress memories.
It does.
All right?
It's just weird, though, because I feel like childhood trauma is very much a thing for Stephen King, and it's a thing in this book, and yet I feel like the only time they experienced trauma was in their childhood, and they completely forgot about it. And I get it, that repression is a thing. But, like, it wasn't this believable thing where I'm like, man, these people are, like, really affected by their past.
Huh. Interesting. Despite the fact that Beverly chose, basically, to marry her father.
She was the only one.
No, not the only one.
Or Mike.
Eddie. Married his mother.
Okay.
Literally also, by the way, because the actress turns out to be who played the mom, also plays his wife.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic. That's cute.
Creepy, right? Yeah, yeah. Our audience member made a face.
Well, then...
The entire audience made a face in that comment.
But, okay, what about Richie?
Which was Richie?
The comedian, Bill Hader.
Well, he has... he has internalized homophobia.
Yeah, that also was disappointing.
Yes and no.
Yes, I was literally waiting for him to say, I'm gay.
Right.
I'm gay. He never does.
He's true. He does not.
So then it's like, he never faced any fucking fear.
All right. Really good point. All right, fine. Let's just get into this right now.
And then also, from Beverly jumping from relationship to relationship, what kind of fucking addressing of her fears is she doing? Or what kind of addressing of her traumas is she doing?
What relationship?
From her abusive husband to Ben, just because after 27 years, she's like, oh, you wrote me a beautiful poem and I'm attracted to you now?
Because he was in love with her.
Oh, and snore.
And it was his kiss that actually broke the spell in the beginning. It was true love's kiss.
Oh, God.
All right. You gotta, like, give...
The only time I've ever liked true love's kiss was in Frozen when Elsa kissed her sister.
And which was a nice... Yes, I agree. That was a very nice thing. But I think also at the same time, you gotta just, like, recognize this is... These are fantasies. Like, these aren't, like... I'm just saying. It's just, like, a lot of...
No, that's... Oh, just popping it off and being like, this is a fantasy. No, I'm sorry. I don't accept that. It is.
It's, like, fiction. Like, I can't expect realism. It's a... Like you said, you want a horror movie. I don't know if this is a horror movie. I don't know. I don't know if I count these as horror movies. They're thrillers.
But
they're
thrillers. I think it is also, to the real horror of our lives.
Yes.
The real things
and
that
it's
are...
It's there, which is where, because of that, you're trying to connect to me and my fears and my childhood traumas, then make it more believable.
But they're not trying to connect to just, like, I don't...
To every audience member.
I don't think so. Then these are very specific traumas and fears that these kids experience.
You don't think that anyone can resonate with, say, Beverly? Or you don't think that anyone can resonate with, like, Ben's fear of, like, people not loving you and you ending up alone, which is apparently his fear? Or, like, Bill... And his fear of the fact that, like, he lived with guilt like guilt,
uh-huh,
fear of living your entire life for thinking that you were responsible for something. These are very real fears that people can connect with.
Maybe in the when you bring it
particular
down like this,
situations.
Maybe I'm thinking of like the specific fears.
No, yeah, of, like yeah, yeah. No, of course, like nobody's little brother got killed by a demonic entity in like a sewer thing, but like
that we know of.
But guilt is a very real thing. And yeah, that we know of, yes.
Yeah, we want to respect everybody.
Yeah. We're also we should backtrack and talk about the person who plays Pennywise.
The Skarsgård.
Bill, right?
Bill, yeah. He's one of the Skarsgård. There's so many.
There are. And his interpretation is very different from Tim Curry. Tim Curry did like the old kind of like man that wants to put you in his truck. But I feel like Skarsgård interpretation was more so like I felt a demonic entity. Personally.
Yeah, agree.
Kind of like otherworldly. Also just because of the beginning scene in the first one where he's talking to Georgie in the sewer crate.
Uh-huh.
And his voice and just the way he does it is genuinely disturbing.
It is. It's a good voice.
It's not just like some creepy old guy. It's like there's...
It's like a creepy old guy trying to play a clown.
Do you want a balloon too, Georgie?
I'm not supposed to take stuff from strangers.
Oh, well, I'm Pennywise the Dancing Clown. Pennywise? Yes, meet Georgie. Georgie... Meet Pennywise. Now we aren't strangers, are we?
He had like, what's it called? So you could tell like, he had like those like deep undertones of like kind of like sinister. And then like he was able to manipulate his voice to have those like high, those high notes that makes it so like creepy.
Yeah.
I think is what he was able to accomplish.
Yeah, no, his approach was very effective. It was, yeah,
I agree. I think it was very nice and stuff.
Yeah.
Speaking of opening scenes, though, let's talk about the violence children experience, because I this is actually one of my favorite parts of... This is why I like It, number one, over the other ones, because It, number one, gave you something that I don't think I'd ever really seen, which is just like when Georgie got his arm bitten off. Like, I never had seen like a child like actually... physically hurt. Usually it's always implied and you never see it. This one we saw like his arm get chopped off.
Yeah, no, I think
and that was horrific and yet so satisfying. Not like satisfying in the sense of just like, oh, this is like, oh, this movie's gonna deliver something that I had not seen.
Yeah, no, definitely it sets a tone. And I think that I got bothered by so many of the child's like atrocities, which is why I think it was effective.
What other child atrocities?
Well, first of all, them carving the fucking H into Ben's stomach was highly unpleasant.
That was true.
Yeah. The relationship implied between Beverly and her father, highly unpleasant.
That was sexually...
Yeah.
But that was another one where it's like implication not, you don't ever see anything. So basically, it's all up to interpretation there.
And then in the second one, when it... There's two parts that were genuinely very perturbing. Him under the bleachers with that girl. That was actually devastating. I wanted to cry.
Interesting. So I like that one. I was kind of disappointed in that one because they kind of cop... They
didn't show you
They
enough.
Didn't show us
I'm
anything.
So glad they didn't show it to I me because I would have been like flat out crying.
I actually also kind of had wished that it seemed like she was like a smarter girl.
Yeah, that too.
I was
and
hoping
that
they would go the route
thing.
Where like she'd be like, no, I don't mess around
and
with changes.
Escaped,
and it'd be great story-wise because like it's showing that like maybe it right now from what the defeat that he suffered before is not as strong as he was before, right? Hence why he's calling
that
the
could
kids
have been
to...
yeah no that was just a, it was there just to disturb people.
It was just there to disturb you. It was
which is also
it,
why I was like fuck you.
Plot wise, like this girl had no connection to anybody.
No, she was just like, just so you know, he's still terrorizing and killing children, bam.
Right, because our first interaction with it in the second part was the gay couple.
Yes,
which I actually want to talk I think as
Let's
a gay man,
it.
We have a lot.
I just want to say one more thing, though, about the childhood things. Like, I found that also upsetting because also, too, I really feel like he wasn't preying on her fears. So then it's also like, why was he able to kill her? Because she was, I think, stronger and smarter than other kids that he had recently developed with. And then the second one in the funhouse, when he's banging his head against that fucking mirror, was just so...
Creepy.
Creepy. Yeah. And effective.
It was.
But so the film, Chapter 2.
Chapter 2.
Begins with a gay couple that we don't know. They're just the victims in the beginning, but they're visiting Derry because one of them is in Derry, and they are brutally beaten by Derry locals who are homophobic.
The reason they're beaten, though, is because they're out with their relationship.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, by homophobic Derry locals.
And they get, what's it called? As a result, they end up having a target. However, it's important. The reason this is important is because of like this is where the It mythology kind of falls apart a little in Chapter 2.
Oh.
All right? The out the one gay, there's two gay men. One is really ready to hide so he doesn't have to encounter any danger. The other one, the one I would say is more coded, obviously, like
Xavier Dolan.
Yeah. Is that who he is?
He's a filmmaker, yeah.
Oh, didn't know that. All right. So he is like really out and proud. He stands up to his, like, the bullies. He does. And as a result, that's what ends up causing the two of them to, you know, end up getting like in this hate
that,
crime.
Well, that's the one that's he is pretty much murdered because he is murdered. The other one just gets beaten. He gets murdered.
Right. But even while he's getting the shit beat out of him, what does he do? He's still fucking like he's still fighting. Mm-hmm. He's not afraid.
No, he's not. He's still insults his haircut.
Then he gets thrown overboard over a bridge and the clown finds him and saves him and eats him. Now, here's where I kind of have a problem. It's just like, from a story wise, it should not have been the gay guy who has shown no fear. It should have been the other guy because he was the one who was afraid. And it was just a little mistake that I was already just like, oh, this kind of is already throwing me off a little because like he feeds off of fear. Like, yeah, being rescued by a clown on a river, sure, that might be scary. But the man just literally stood up to like four homophobic guys who were just beating the shit out of him.
True, but I also think that was just literally him waking up and needing to feed, and it just so happens that he fed on this man who was thrown overboard by a homophobic gay crime.
Sure, but I think, again, it's just like...
He wasn't attacked by
the clown. This would have been a very simple fix of just like just flipping over who's going to get thrown overboard.
I think it matters more if Pennywise had attacked them himself. Like, I literally think it was just timing-wise. It was like, oh, here's a hate crime that just so happened to happen when Pennywise needed to feed.
Maybe, but also at the same time, like, the reason, because right after that, the one we see is Mike, and Mike has apparently been on this trail, and he's kind of put the pieces together. It's just like, it's happening again. Mm-hmm. One crime would not be enough to signify that it's happening again.
But so I think this is... But, so, well, no, it wasn't a crime. It was dismemberment in the sewers. Even then,
but I don't think it's just like, this one dismemberment is going to be the one that kind of tips him off that's starting all over again. There must have been already a pattern going on.
I suppose. And then, he did say there was a pattern. And then okay. Also, time-wise, so that means it was 27 years.
That means that the it entity himself isn't... This isn't a crime of opportunity.
I think that there's a lot of confusion. And that's why it's also the ending didn't really deliver for me, because it's like, I feel like there were moments where they weren't as afraid of you, or like you weren't really killing and feeding off of fear. Mm-hmm. So how is this what's being able to kill you at this moment? Mm-hmm. The fact that they were just like clown, stupid. And they just started screaming at it. And that's how that fucking thing after 5 hours of that insane torture gets defeated.
Yeah, it's very much sticks and stones will never hurt. No, sticks and stones may break my bones, but apparently so do words.
Yeah, no, like seriously, like you don't need to take his heart out like at all, because all you need to do is just call him a clown. But he was and that's how he gets defeated.
Clown could be a very harsh thing to say. If we were at RuPaul's Drag Race,
why are you defending con, this?
Just, no, because I'm just like, I'm messing with you. I agree with you, like executionally, it was kind of like a little hokey. But at the same time, I think it was, I don't know, it worked. For me.
It worked for you? Story-wise. It didn't work for me. It was absolutely ludicrous, in my opinion.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the same problem you have with the 90s one.
Yeah, it is. Right. It is. I think it's just my problem in general. Like, and same thing like I repeat before. Love the idea that, like, as long as you overcome your fears, you know, because at that point, he had put them through so much shit that I'm sure that they were just fucking exhausted and ready to fight back. And it's like, just throw whatever you have at me. I'm, like, not afraid anymore. Mm-hmm. You've literally cured my fears. That I get. But then it's just, like, the approach of how... you being stronger and overcoming your fears is what's going to kill it, and them just like literally parading him to death, which is just it's a little wonky.
Yes, they become it's their just, own. The they execution become the own bullies.
Yeah, just I don't know. It didn't work for me.
I don't know. I find it fine. To be honest,
you,
I did.
Okay, and you found that a good ending. To the point where even the movie addresses that Stephen King endings are not very good.
And then maybe that's also why I kind of appreciated it, because like that was the running
because
gag.
They throw in a self-reference, like, it's okay.
I mean, literally Stephen King himself is the one who says like your endings.
Yeah, Stephen
sucked.
King makes a cameo in the movie and he says that. And then I'm just like, oh, let this guy fucking speak for himself and have self-awareness. Fuck off, because this guy is a fucking creep. Who? Stephen King.
Oh, so now why do you think he's a creep?
Can I read you something?
Sure.
Okay, cool. So I found, while doing my research, because I wasn't going to read this book, but I wanted to be somewhat aware of it. So I found this list amidst my research. And the title of this list is The Top 5 Sickest Stephen King Sex Scenes.
And we'll be sure to add this in our show notes.
Yes, we will, because you're going to want to read this. So the way that they list it too is really interesting, and I'll give you the top five. Number one is the scene from It, but number five is anal with a handgun in the stand.
Ooh.
Yeah. Number four is electro rape in Apt Pupil.
Oh, I like that people. And that was a Stephen King?
That was, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Number three is licking semen-stained sheets in Dedication.
Well, I mean, who doesn't do that?
Stop. Stop.
Number two is the incredibly detailed child rape in The Library Policeman. Okay. Which apparently lasts for five pages.
The Library Policeman?
Yeah. And then number
one. It lasts for 5 pages?
It lasts for 5 pages. Wow. Then the number one is the children's gangbang in It.
Okay.
Which, so.
Explain to us what is a children's gangbang in It.
Do not explain that.
No.
I think in the title alone. It's
yeah, right. I think.
No. Okay, fine. We know that. Do we Stephen know King why goes it into happens
detail?
In the book?
We don't want to go into detail. We do know why it happens okay, in the so book. That's... So here's the thing. Beverly. We're going to talk a little bit about Beverly right now. The only woman in this group of losers that two of the boys, Ben and Bill, in the move, in all iterations of this, both like. They both have a crush on her. Only girl. They're 11 years old. They're facing a demonic, otherworldly entity in the sewers. Mm-hmm. They do somehow defeat it. They don't entirely defeat it, but they defeat it enough that they're like, let's go home. But in the book, they have trouble finding their ways out of the sewers, and it comes down to them needing to sacrifice their innocence in order for them to get out, apparently.
Okay.
So the way that Stephen King decides to do this is that all of the children, by Beverly's wish, have sex with her, one after the other.
So it's consensual.
Yes. According to Stephen King, Beverly's idea is that this is the only way we're going to lose innocence, guys. So repeatedly, let's all do this right now.
Okay.
Which results in, I'm sorry, a gangbang. Whether or not it's consensual, it's still a gangbang.
No, gangbang, but a gangbang can be consensual.
Okay. Yes, it can be consensual, but a gangbang is still a gangbang sure. of 11-year-olds.
That's where I think this is gross, obviously.
I don't know why Stephen King thought it was necessary to tell the story. I think he also just likes to gross people out at the end of the day. Mm. I think he likes to kind of just like be that creepo and weirdo that goes there. Especially if you read the rest of this list and just read, I don't know. I've never read a book, and that's why you can fucking attack me for it. But at the end of the day, after reading this list, I'm not intrigued to read any of his books, because it's like, why are you so obsessed with creeping people out, especially sexually? That's what it really seems like.
Oh, well, I mean,
now one of the ones on the list sounds like it was actually crucial to the story as to why he had a really unnecessary long child rape scene that he detailed in a book. But this, I'm sorry, it didn't have to be that they had to sacrifice their innocence by joining in a gangbang in order for them to get out of the sewers. He did not have to write that. Well, that doesn't really make sense.
I don't disagree with you. He didn't have to write it. I don't know. It's just like...
A grown man writing this is just a very creepy thought. I'm sorry.
I agree with you. I'm not defending Stephen King.
There's a reason they have to sacrifice their innocence for some fucking reason, whatever. It doesn't... No, not okay. I'm not okay with this. So now watching and thinking back about it and thinking about the Beverly character and all the shit that he puts her through and the fact that at the end of the day, too, when she grows up, she's still highly sexualized by two people and that she has to end up in a love romance and that has to be claimed by one of the boys really pisses me off.
Wait, who was she sexualized by?
Ben.
No.
And
Ben longing for her doesn't mean that she was sexualized by him.
Ben was possessive towards her.
Yeah, I'll give you that, but that doesn't equate.
When you are possessive, you are sexually involved.
But wait, in what sense did you get that he was possessive of her?
Anytime she talked to Bill, there was a cut to him watching it, not okay with it.
Call jealousy. That doesn't mean that he's possessive of her.
The same thing. Jealousy will lead to possession.
No.
Yeah.
I disagree with you there. Now all jealousy will lead to possession and stuff. Like, you can literally be jealous of someone. That does not mean that you think that you own them. In fact, I would argue the fact that he walked away to let Bill, Bill and her have their kiss, and you can see him crying. That was like the most gut-wrenching moment in the movie, where like you see like that Ben
as
was
children,
just, like,
maybe
as children.
I'm talking about as adults, first of all. Also, you can be jealous of, but once sex and love and all of that shit gets involved, then it's a thin line from one to the next.
But I think. He was jealous, but that doesn't mean that he was possessed. In fact, he never grabbed her. He never tried to. All he was just doing, and this is
happening. Well, no, he hadn't seen her in 27 years. He couldn't get away with that.
But like, the other thing you have to realize is just like, when you're around people that you haven't been around in a long time, you tend to revert back to kind of the social hierarchy that you were then. You just do, right? And it's sometimes you'll try to break out of it and it turns into a pissing contest. It does. I never got the sense that like he was, he never really went out of his way to like really get in the way between Bill and Beverly, because he was just jealous. He was heartbroken. He did not go out of his way to like say, it's just like, yo girl, like I'm the one who wrote you that letter. I'm the one who has loved you from like the beginning. I'm the one who gave you that kiss that broke the spell.
The point is though, is that at the end of the day, she was still this woman that he entirely just wanted to fuck, right? One of the guys just had to like claim her and like just was so fucking in love with her, and that at the end of the day, she couldn't have any time alone. And I'm sorry, I'm big on like women being treated in a way that they should be. And this woman was not written well. This woman was not treated the way the opening scene of her and her relationship. Devastating to see, unfortunately, highly accurate, and we should probably see that women get into relationships like this because of their cycles of abuses. But like, still, it's like, I really feel like finding out what happened in the book really affects my view of this Beverly character in general, because I just feel like, unfortunately, it's just someone who doesn't understand women very well. Because had he understood who he was writing, then at the end of it, she would have been alone. She wouldn't have been with Ben.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like she doesn't even learn anything. All of them learned all this stuff and faced their fears, but she jumps into a relationship with this guy that she wrote her a poem when she was 11.
I think, I don't know. I just feel like...
I just feel like as a woman and the only person that I'm supposed to resonate with, the only thing that I get resonated with is that, yeah, men will treat you like fucking shit and sexually and physically abuse you. That's it.
I understand.
Love doesn't always save the day for women. I'm sorry. That's also the thing that men think.
I do agree with you. Like, you're right. Love does not always, does not end up saving the day. And you're right.
Especially with the fucking shit that she went through sexually. And then reading that shit in the book, like, actually at that point, fuck you.
Well, that's the sexually thing. Like, she was just sexually... Oh, it's implied that she was sexually abused by her father.
But yes,
like,
no, she was. And then abused by her husband. Well,
it was never like... I don't know. That's like interpreted. That's again, that's like... all, like you can... Some people have seen this scene and not said that she was like sexually abused. I think they're in denial. But...
Yeah, no, she was most certainly... He sprayed perfume all over her body so that she could smell like her mother.
That's true.
He fucking abused her. It was disgusting.
It was a...
All this woman has known was abuse. And in the book, she voluntarily lets herself be gangbanged by her best friends.
In the book.
So it's just like...
Oh, right. That's the point I want to make.
Women are just objects. But women need to be saved by love. But keep in mind,
these two adaptations were not written by Stephen King.
In all iterations... She just jumps into a relationship with Ben. It's just, it's very annoying, because had she been one of the boys, they all find the strength to like move on with their lives. But no, she just had to find another relationship to fall into. And it really actually kind of aggravates me, because it's just another one of those moments where it's like, of course that happens to the only woman in the fucking group.
I was actually more...
You looked at it as a love thing, but you looked at it because you also don't look at it as a woman who's angry of seeing these things happen to women.
Absolutely 100% true. I was actually more like pissed off at Ben for still pining over her. Just like, yo, boy.
Get over it, yeah.
It's 27 years. You're like a fucking snack. You can get anyone. You can.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how gratuitous a shirtless scene with him was when he takes off his shirt because, you know, the Pennywise is carving into him. You see his abs and the feet cut. I didn't
remember that. Yeah.
His low riding jeans. I was just like, good Lord, Ben is way too hot. They cast is way too hot of Ben. That's my gripe with this movie. Ben was way too hot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, we didn't talk about Bill Hader, which is, and the gay. So there was, in the 1990s version, the implication was that not Eddie...
Richie.
No, Richie was straight. Eddie was gay.
In
the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah, right? Eddie was a hypochondriac, right? Because right before they go into the cave, he confesses to them how he's never been with anybody, ever.
Yeah. And everyone was just yes.
And even the way he's portrayed... There's coded language that he might be gay. He's neat. He's clean.
Mm-hmm. You know? Which, that Eddie's more believable.
You think?
Yeah, like, with his over-abusive mother, of course he's going to be afraid to, like, go into... Over-possessive mother, he's going to be afraid to go into any relationship with anyone.
Yeah, fine. I give you that. Now, in the latest version, it is the character played by Bill Hader that is gay?
Right? We don't know.
We don't... I mean, I guess it's never said directly that he is gay, but he did put R plus sign E, right?
Like he was in love with Eddie.
I think that was and that's why he was so devastated when Eddie dies.
Because
he was in love with Eddie.
Mm, it could be that.
And the other, and keep in mind, I mean, he was the other one. He was like, I think the character, at least in part two, that really got called a faggot when he was in the arcade, right?
Yeah.
Which is another like, I think that's a real, almost a real life moment.
Something that wasn't really touched upon in the first film.
No, right. Well, I have an issue with the...
Yeah, which is all of a sudden that comes up and then it's like, wait a minute, what? Now you're going to throw this at me?
Yeah. So the fact that Finn Wolfgang's character himself might be gay. It was implied.
Mm-hmm.
And...
Wolfhard? I think you said Wolfgang.
Wolfhard. Oh, I said Wolfgang. Oh, Wolfhard. and then, you know, keep in mind also, this character, he encounters the zombie version of the dead gay character. He's the one who gives him the pamphlet that says like, oh, your funeral program.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when Pennywise comes down with the balloons. Like, I know your secret. I know your secret.
Yeah.
And obviously Richie is freaked out because keep in mind, Richie is supposed to be like a stand-up comedian. And what we can tell, at least from like the first minute of his set, is just like, he's obviously like someone who does gross out sexual humor.
Yeah.
So like a lot of his identity is probably built on the fact that he is supposed to be heterosexual.
Mm-hmm.
Not to say anything, because like keep in mind, his character admits that he doesn't write his own material, so he's kind of like a construct from like the big comedy machine, whatever that might be. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know what message is trying to sell here. But yeah,
I thought I was a little disappointed, just especially because everyone else gets their kind of like neat little bow wrapped up, especially fucking Beverly. Like, why couldn't Richie's character be a little bit more explored? Like, mm-hmm. There's also like a lot of not wanting to deal with that kind of a thing. Like,
the fact that he's gay.
And this is when I wish I knew the book, because I don't know how they tackle that or how that happens. But it also just seems like, I don't know why it was there. It wasn't really delivered. And as like, you know, you begin with this whole like homophobic attack. So I was like, okay, so maybe they're actually going to address this in this film, and they're going to address like fear, sexuality fears.
Mm-hmm.
And the film kind of did not at all, according with Beverly and with Richie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was opportunity missed.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then it like also begs the question, okay, so then what is this film about, and what is this film trying to bring out within us? Because then when it became overly sentimental, is it just, you know, like childhood friendship? Is that what you're concerned with?
Mm-hmm.
And how at the end of the day, like, everything is childhood friendship? Ugh, fucking snore, man. We're adults now. Like, give me something that is more resonating instead of like sentimental about the past and mm-hmm. friendship and stuff, the people you haven't seen in 27 fucking years.
Interesting.
Disappointing.
So right before I get into it, do you think it chapter 1 and 2 were needed?
I think that theoretically, a better adaptation of it was needed for Stephen King fans, and because people are like, you know, let's see a better rendition of it.
Uh-huh.
So, and we got a great Pennywise, really scary. Mm. You know, that works, and now people can look at it and think of it as like, oh, a scary movie that actually kind of mm-hmm. fucked with me, instead of kind of like this jokey movie with a great Tim Curry performance from the 90s.
Uh-huh.
So in that like fanboy world, it was needed.
Okay.
Outside of that, with what I've found out within my own research, with looking at everything that I looked at, and with the opportunities missed in the second one, where it kind of promised me that it would fix those things, then it didn't,
mm-hmm.
especially in these characters that are quote unquote the minority, the women, and the gay, the one gay character, and then the black man, didn't deliver.
Mm.
Mike was a very undeveloped character. They all went off and found something, but we don't go with Mike. Mike's just like kind of there to bring them together, and it was just kind of like, really? Like, give me more Mike.
He gets his happy ending, at least.
Yeah, they all get their fucking ridiculous happy endings that are also not believable.
Well,
I don't know.
Stephen King can't write endings.
Yeah, pretty much. so in that sense, I thought maybe it would dig a little deeper and it would, you know, rectify some things, and it didn't. So at the end of the day, no, I don't think this was needed.
Interesting. So I half agree with you. I actually think it chapter one, that one was needed, because that one was such a good movie from beginning to end, and it delivered on scares. Like, for me, one of my favorite scares was when they're looking at the film projection, and then you have like this huge, over the top, like size Pennywise. Like, that genuinely scared me, right? Because it messes with Pennywise can be whatever he wants to be. So he can be however big he wants to be. And it still messes with you, because like up until this point, you think that like these rules, Pennywise is only one size and that's it. That's how you encounter him. To see him like this large garage sized monster terrified me. It messed mm-hmm. with me. It was good. It was fun. And they were able to deliver a story from beginning to end that I liked. I don't know I don't think chapter 2 was needed. I think we needed a different chapter 2, to be honest. And I think one of my biggest gripes with it is how it kind of retcons a little stuff that happened in the first one.
Yeah.
Specifically, all the flashbacks the kids had. Because if we remember, in part 1, the kids split up for a short period of time before they go defeat the big bad.
Yeah, of course.
And it was apparently in this time when they all had an individual experience with it.
Mm-hmm.
And my problem with chapter 2 is that it makes it weaker because it was apparently terrible at killing kids.
Yeah,
like he had so many opportunities to kill them. They were obviously terrified of him up to this point. So yeah. The reason they broke up was because they were scared of it. Mm-hmm. And he just didn't kill them.
Yeah,
just like I don't get it, Pennywise. What are you doing? What is your goal here now? Now you're confusing me.
That's also like so. This is it. Like does a terrible job at killing them. Does a great job at scaring them, but doesn't kill them, which seems to be his goal. But then at the end, when he finally has them, that's how they defeat it. It doesn't make a lot of sense.
So. Yeah, up at that point, it was just that retconning of what happened that we didn't see in part one. Mm-hmm. I was just like, if you had cut all that out, that's a whole hour. Then you would have made this movie 2 hours and you're focusing on just the adults and kind of how they're going to take care of it.
Yeah.
So that's it.
Lightning round?
Let's do a lightning round.
Pew, lightning round.
Bill.
Are we doing adults or
all of
adult
them.
Bill? Or all iterations of Bill?
Yeah.
Oh. James McAvoy.
Yeah.
James McAvoy.
Definitely James McAvoy.
First of all, I've never been a fan of James McAvoy. I never found him attractive. He was hot in this movie. I don't know what was up with his limp. He had like a weird limp going on.
I think that's just his strut.
Oh, it's a weird strut. He was limping. I thought something happened to Bill as a child. I was like, wait, did I miss something? Did he like break his leg?
No.
Yeah, it was just a weird strut. But I must say that stripe that he has in his hair, that dignified white stripe in the part, very, very dignified, very, 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 very good to look at. It was just like, oh, this is good. This works for you, James McAvoy. Yeah. So okay. I'm going with James McAvoy.
I would go with James McAvoy too. I just thought he was a better. He kind of like has those weird leader pride issues, and his guilt felt more like present in his life than in the first one. And the Audra stuff in the first one was.
I mean,
stupid.
James McAvoy is good. I hated the hair on the.
Oh yeah, that ponytail.
That ponytail had to go.
Awful.
Ugh. No, awful. Wrong.
Ben.
Okay, I think I actually like the '90s Ben a little better.
Of the kid or the actor?
The actor.
Yeah, no, both. I did not. Yeah,
both. I'll say both.
I liked the kid in the new one. I thought he was really great, actually.
He was adorable.
He was. But the older one, I like John Ritter better. I thought that the new Ben was just a pretty face.
I don't know if necessarily I like John Ritter's better.
Mm-hmm.
So I think what I liked about John Ritter's character was because John Ritter is not like super thin. He was, he was kind of, he had like a dad bod.
He looked like a believable version of an older Ben. He looked like a believable
version of like someone who was a fat kid, what they could look like.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that all fat kids, you know, if you lose weight, you're going to always look like some sort of chunky monkey. But the majority of us do. I did the smart thing. I just stayed fat. So, so no one will ever know what I look like skinny.
Well, there was some real projection going on there.
No, and that was my biggest beef with Ben in the new one. He was way too hot. Just way, way too hot.
Yeah, and just did not feel like
that. But way too hot.
Didn't feel like that kid grew up to be that. Like, not at all. I could have been cast better.
Yeah.
Richie.
Bill Hader.
Yeah, Bill Hader was
Bill Hader gave a great performance on that one.
Yeah, he was great. Yeah. The audience loved him, too.
Yeah, like, yeah. I mean,
yeah, he won everyone over.
Bill. I mean, his performance was the best performance out of everybody.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
I like him.
Interestingly enough, I also like the new Richie.
Finn Wolfhard?
Yeah, he was good.
No.
I liked him.
Yeah. No, I agree. Bill Hader was great as Richie. Eddie.
Oh, Eddie. I'm going to go with the new Eddie. Also.
Yeah, I liked the new Eddie.
Yeah, old Eddie was. The 90s Eddie was just like.
Wallpaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very
new Eddie was great. Mike.
Man, they were all the same. They were all
the same. Yeah, they were. Yeah, like, right? Like now that's such a fucking shame.
I think I like the young Mike from the new version.
Okay.
Right? Because he lost his parents in the fire that may or may not. I don't think it was related at all to Pennywise.
Mm.
But he was also kind of like the researcher also, and like the, you know, so he's one who helps put all the pieces together.
Okay.
What about you?
I kind of liked his like grumpy detective thing from the first one, but I guess also I'm just genuinely disappointed at how not well developed he was.
All right.
So I guess, yeah, I'll go with the first one.
Okay.
Stanley.
I never liked Stanley in any of these versions.
Poor Stanley was just kind of there, and he needed to be sacrificed for them to get together, so I get it.
And that's how this movie lost its innocence.
Yeah. Yeah. That could have been... One of them could have killed themselves. They didn't have to do a gangbang.
Oh, technically, they would have had to kill him to lose innocence.
That's true.
So they would have had to, like, all choke him. Oh, am I going to be beautifully shot like Orient Express, where one by one they're just stabbing
him? Yeah. Oh, yeah. That would have been great. Yeah, yeah. See,
we're already pitching, obviously, the new version of It.
Yeah. You know?
27 years from now.
Yeah. Well, it would have to include the internet. So how can you sacrifice yourself on the internet?
You post a naked picture of yourself.
Yes. There you go. Bam. They could have just done that. See, no gangbang needed.
Mm-hmm.
Beverly.
Huh. I think I like young Beverly the most in the new version. That's the one I think I enjoyed.
Beverly in the first one was great. Great performance.
You can see how scared she was in the moments with her father.
Yes.
And yet how the actress had to kind of pretend like... It's this weird thing, right? You had to show that you're scared at the same time while trying to show that you're not.
Yeah.
And she
did
such a good job of that.
She did.
She did. She was great.
And Jessica Chastain is great.
Yeah, Jessica Chastain is good. I think the young girl performance is... Like, it was a better written character.
Yeah.
You know?
Pennywise.
Oh, okay. So I did a lot of soul searching for this one, but I think my favorite Pennywise is Tim Curry's Pennywise. It's so cartoonish. It's so over the top. But it works. Like, I mean, my favorite scene is when Ben kisses Beverly,
mm-hmm.
and then he looks in the mirror and he realizes it's Pennywise.
Yes.
So then the next shot is Pennywise, smeared lipstick. He looks all shocked and he's just like, "Kiss me, fat boy."
Yeah.
I was just like, I'm here for it.
Yeah.
That's when he won me over. I'm just like, this is my Pennywise forever.
Although I think that the new Pennywise feels more like a believable kind of weird entity and is really creepy.
Uh-huh.
There is just something so precious about Tim Curry's Pennywise.
It holds up.
It does.
I think that's what it is.
I think I like it for the kitsch.
Yeah. And the camp. I mean, just watching it in the 90s, right? It's a movie from the 90s. The movie itself is kind of like, eh. And yet, I found myself just captivated by the performance.
Yeah,
for sure. And as a result, it's just like, this is the winner.
Tim Curry forever.
Tim Curry, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's it on It. Are you ready to face your fears?
Oh my God. Did you buy me a house in the suburbs?
Yes. Well, I bought it for me. You can visit. That's your fear, right? Visiting someone's house in the suburbs.
Yeah, driving an hour to the middle of nowhere. Just to
see that's my fear right there. It's just like, I got to drive an hour and a half to visit my friends. You're not friends anymore.
Yeah, but what I'm really afraid of is people not liking this episode. So did you like it? Did you agree with us? Let us know. You can reach us on Instagram, Remakes, Reboots, Revivals, or you can email us, remakesrebootsrevivals@gmail.com.
Yeah.
Or hit us up on Facebook, but...
No, you hit up us on Facebook. We need the likes.
Yeah.
You
know? We could always use more.
And also, guys, do not forget, but please rate us on whatever app you listen to, because that just helps us.
Yeah, please
once
do
again,
rate us.
Let us know. Do you like the new cover art?
Yes.
We want to know. Well, that is that on It. Let's leave Derry for hopefully another 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Mm-hmm. Until then, stay unoriginal.